Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Undoubtedly, one of the prime assets of living in Tulsa is our urban forest, the magnificent shaded neighborhoods throughout the city, public spaces that have trees, all add to an unquantifiable quality of life. But Up With Trees has been trying to actually quantify that quality of life and has tried to determine exactly what and how much an urban forest adds to the economic and environmental bottom line of the city. Over the past 18 months, Up With Trees has worked on a Tulsa Urban Forest Master Plan, which is being unveiled today. The master plan involves a 5-year maintenance and planning plan for all Tulsa public schools, increased planning efforts to assist Tulsa Community College campuses in becoming Tree Campus USA certified, collaborating with NCOG to incorporate the master plan into the Planet Tulsa Comprehensive Plan, and a major beautification project along the corridor from Tulsa's airport to downtown Tulsa. And also with the identification of the pest, the emerald ash borer, now being present in Oklahoma, working with a task force to create a response plan for the city of Tulsa. Over 200,000 trees in Tulsa are ash trees and are in danger from that pest. Well, joining us today to talk about the master plan is Steve Grantham, the executive director of Up With Trees. You can learn more about the plan at upwithtrees.org. And he joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Steve Grantham, well, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Gosh, it seems like it was quite a while ago when you came on this show and talked about Up With Trees developing a urban forest master plan, and today you've unveiled that master plan. Why is an urban forest plan important?
It's important because an urban forest is extremely important to building a community. It's very much a framework on what, you know, I was at Lights On last Thursday night, and if you would consider showing up, I spent a lot of money. Actually, my daughters helped me spend a lot of money, but just the commerce that went on, family members and friends getting together, and just that community building, the jobs from that commerce, and the value of the homes around there, that really catches in a snapshot what trees mean to our community.
And that's just a little single snapshot event of lighting a bunch of trees with holiday lights.
Yeah, because if the trees weren't there, it would be very anticlimactic, a million lights, you know, on the ground. So the event wasn't about the trees, but it couldn't have happened without them. And so it's the importance of an urban forest to building a safe, a resilient, economically vibrant community. So because an urban forest is important, planning that out, how can we all work together, private, public sector, nonprofit, how can everybody work together to be as efficient as possible, effective as possible, having the greatest impact on the community?
Now, how are we doing as a community? I mean, compared to other cities, I've heard this story several times. I don't know if it's apocryphal, but, you know, that airline pilots refer to Tulsa as the green city because when you fly over it, all you see is trees.
Sure.
I don't know if that's true or not, but certainly when you fly over it, you see a lot of trees and you don't see a lot of cityscape.
Yeah. It catches people off guard. I know of some people who are flown in to do some assessments and they thought they had been diverted. They were expecting to come to Tulsa and they looked out and saw all these trees and why were we diverted? So yes, it does catch people off guard. But, you know, how are we doing compared to other cities? I can tell you Atlanta is close to about 40% tree canopy coverage. But if you would consider where they were founded, kind of in the middle of a forest. So, you know, we are on the edge of a forest and into plains. We're at 26%. Is that good? Is that bad?
That's actually our tree coverage in the city.
That is our percentage within the city limits of Tulsa. Some of the quantification that came out of the assessments in this plan. Is it good? Is it bad? It's just a number. But are we happy with that? And if we want to grow that, what are those policies and procedures and practices that we need to put into place to hit those targets?
So as you went through this master plan, what was the reaction to, say, governmental officials? Do they see this as an important issue? Do they see it as sort of periphery? It's a nice thing to have, but what exactly?
Well, and I will say that across the board, talking to our elected officials, they definitely see the benefit that trees provide, whether it's simply beautification, but going beyond that, air quality, water quality, the economic impact. So our elected officials have been very open to this. They understand that, you know, we get multiple benefits by planting trees, that we could reduce some of our long-term, let's say, gray infrastructure costs by diverting stormwater through utilizing trees. But then we also get those aesthetic benefits. We get the reduction of heat island effect and all of those multiple benefits that trees provide.
I think the last few weeks in northeastern Oklahoma, you can see the difference that the heat island does make. I don't think really the city of Tulsa proper has had a freeze, but outside, you could drive 30, 40 miles outside of the city, everywhere else has had a freeze. Can a healthy urban forest canopy actually reduce that heat island?
Absolutely. You know, in shading those impervious surfaces, it does many things. One, reduction of heat island effect, which we have seen definitely in November, but we certainly see in July and August. And the mitigation of ozone that comes with that. So it goes to air quality, which also becomes an economic aspect of staying off the EPA's dirty air list, an economic aspect of lower incidences of cardiopulmonary issues, so your healthcare costs and things like that. But also shading those hard surfaces, asphalt, concrete, our roads, makes them last longer. I mean, the freeze-thaw effect, the heat extremes are mitigated in some ways, so they last longer, which, again, is an economic aspect where we don't have to replace these as often. And then sheltering those impervious surfaces definitely helps with stormwater runoff as well.
Now, one of the things you tried to do with this master plan was actually to quantify the benefits. For example, you mentioned cardiopulmonary issues for people when pollution is bad, the mitigating factor. Can we actually calculate something like that?
So that can be calculated. This wasn't taken into effect in this plan. In needing kind of a healthcare economist to come on board. I would love to have one to help quantify that.
There's probably one somewhere around here.
There are. Other communities have done that, and in increased tree canopy coverage, they've actually quantified the number of reductions in emergency room visits. To flip it on the other side, Columbus, Ohio, with the Emerald Ash Borer coming through, there's a study that shows the increase in visits, asthma-related things, and the only difference is the ash trees have been taken out. You take away everything else, and here is the spike in cardiopulmonary issues, asthma-related issues, emergency room visits, directly correlated to loss of canopy cover.
Now, could it help with ozone exceedances? Because I really always think of ozone as basically, if you have hot, stagnant weather, yep, you're going to have ozone problems.
Absolutely. So in, you know, the ozone goes to, it is the heat, but the extreme heat, if you think of that radiant heat, the heat island effect, if we can lessen that, you know, and helping plan this out as well is looking at trees that put off less pollen and things like that, because those biologic volatile organic compounds, they can help in the creation of that. So in looking across the board, how do we make Tulsa the best place that it can be?
You said you had three benchmarks in creating this master plan, which is being unveiled today, the new Tulsa Urban Forest Master Plan. My guest today, Steve Grantham, Executive Director of Up With Trees. And you had three major benchmarks. What were those benchmarks?
So first was resilient. We want an urban forest that's resilient. Second, we want one that's safe. And third, we want one that's connected. Resiliency just being that, yes, we have it here today, but we want it to be thriving for the next generation and multiple generations going forward.
Now, have we recovered from the huge ice storm in 8 years ago?
We've definitely bounced back. We have some trees that were damaged and kind of started a death cycle of those trees. And, you know, looking 8-9 years later, some of those trees are reaching their natural end. And it has been a long-term situation.
Has the ice storm hastened a lot of the end of, say, mature trees? Because they were damaged, they survived. You know, maybe there was some trimming done, but really
structurally there were issues. Then you come, it's like you and me, once they get stressed out, if there's something else, I mean, it can just kind of create that domino effect.
I would think
effect.
The ice storm followed by the huge drought.
Two years of profound drought. You look at
very
this
hot
November,
temperatures. Yeah.
You know, 85 degrees first week of November with high winds, little rain. We've seen some pretty mature pine trees succumb just in the last few weeks, just based off of that.
So resilient, you say it's a benchmark, but how will you measure how resilient the urban forest is?
Sure. That goes to a couple things. One is the preservation of what we currently have. How can we do that the best? How can we help to educate people all of those multiple benefits that trees create and those economic benefits? So we're not cutting down more than we're planting. That also goes to ordinances in
For further development.
In further development. You know, Edmund had put a plan in place decades ago. How are they going to expand as a city? And so we've looked at other municipalities in trying to help inform those decisions as well.
The second is safe. What do you mean by safe? Safe as in walking in the forest or safe as far as limbs falling on cars and people?
A little bit of both. You know, if you go to resilient, that includes maintenance as well, but maintenance goes into the safety aspect to make sure that our trees are safe, that we're not getting hit on the head with large limbs, and that there are proactive maintenance plans, whether that's within our parks, whether it's our street trees, whether
utilities.
And that's another aspect.
When you start talking utilities and tree trimming, boy, that gets people really upset in this city. So how did you work that out in the master plan for how you do that?
So, you know, PSO has been a great partner through this. They've had a seat at the table. They've been a great supporter of Up With Trees for decades because, you know, the mantra that they have, the mantra that we preach as well, is right tree, right place. Many of those trees that they have had to prune and that get people riled up, they should never have been there in the first place. So planting, this goes back to kind of what my equation has been. If we can be more efficient and more effective, we'll have a greater impact. This goes to that effectiveness. We can efficiently plant a whole lot of trees, but let's make sure they're not Schumard oaks planted right under power lines. Because, you know, in 10 or 15 years, we're going to be very upset when PSO comes through and has to trim them. But they should, because we would be equally as upset if we were without power for 14 or 17 days, if that hypothetically could happen again. You know, and so it is making sure that we have the right trees in the right place, again, for this resilient and safe urban forest.
I know PSO, for a while at least, was publicizing the ability to consult as you plant trees. Is this part of the master plan to make this more available so when people go out to purchase trees, to actually plant a tree in their yard, that there's more available help to say, okay, here's the right place for this so it's not going to be in trouble with power lines or sewer lines or whatever?
You know, part of this entire aspect is what to plant. What does well here? What will thrive? But you can have a 100-foot tall tree and a 15-foot tall tree. And so in looking at what the approved street tree list is for the city and for developers, but also in putting together a very broad list broken up into different categories. And one of them certainly would be what PSO calls utility trees, trees that would do well here, would thrive, but would be great under power lines. And so that list is being worked on as well. The list exists. The segmentation of that list is an ongoing aspect and will be included in the long-term ordinances.
Yeah, and this gets into one of the big areas of this. This is really a strong document for government. How's this master plan going to guide government as they look at overhauling ordinances, creating new ordinances, or maybe looking at what they already have on the books?
Sure. There's been a lot of conversation both leading up to the master plan process, all through the master plan process, knowing that our landscaping ordinances needed to be revised. The decision was made early on to finish the master plan and allow the master plan to help advise those new ordinances. So that is a process that's ongoing currently.
I think now most, when you talk about landscape ordinances, you're talking about commercial development, right?
That is correct.
Not ordinary residential housing, because most people would be surprised to know that there are landscape ordinances in effect.
There are. In looking at those commercial developments that have, you know, large parking lots and things like that, if you would look, again, back to the heat island effect, to the stormwater aspect, focusing on those first, but how can we work with developers and builders on the residential side to help inform them as they build, what should they be planting? Should it be a Bradford pear off the front corner of every single house? Well, they're multiple issues with that scenario.
Well, a lot of times when it comes to actually residential development, that's really left to the homeowner after the house is completed.
Absolutely. And that's why one of the underlying themes across all the keystones of this is education. Educating our elected officials on the policy side, but being able to disseminate this information to the individual homeowner, to the individual decision maker. They still get to make those decisions. There will be nothing particularly codified. You must plant this tree. There's not going to be that. But we advise, we consult, and get that information out so those best choices can be made.
Now, you were ravaging Bradford pears there just a moment ago. But does this master plan say, here are the trees we think that would be awesome in a backyard, great trees for if you have a surface parking unit and you want to have trees as a part of that, in little islands? Does it recommend the best varieties?
So we are continuing to work with city planning. One of the aspects that has taken place during this planning is we got ash trees actually removed from the approved street tree list. Therefore, from a development standpoint, they shouldn't be planted around parking lots and things like that going forward.
And this is all due to the emerald ash borer?
It is. We knew it was coming.
This is a little bug that basically bores into the – yep. And it kills the trees.
You know, it showed up on wooden packing crates mid-2000s in Detroit, Michigan, got shipped in from Asia, and has decimated ash populations all throughout the Midwest. We were, as a state, we were kind of surrounded by it. It was up in Kansas City. It was all through Missouri. Western Arkansas was found in northern Texas a few months ago, Boulder, Colorado, and the Denver area. So every contiguous state to Oklahoma except New Mexico. And then about 6 weeks ago, it was discovered up in Grove. And part of the master plan is to create an emerald ash borer response plan. That working group had already been created because of conversations that came out of this master planning process.
I know up in the upper Midwest, it's like if you move lumber from one state to another, a lot of times there will be inspections in a lot of cases because they're trying to limit the movement of this. Are we going to foresee things like that in Oklahoma down the road?
Absolutely. You know, one of the huge campaigns all throughout the Midwest, don't move firewood, because that's how it does. You know, all these ash trees die. Ash burns great. I've got this stack of wood. I'm going camping, let's say, in Missouri from Illinois, and I transport it. That's probably how it ended up in Grove. And so it will be the don't move firewood, but to the wood products. I mean, the USDA can actually put a quarantine on, and that day is probably coming as it kind of grows out from that epicenter in Grove.
Now, you mentioned it's devastated forests in the upper Midwest. Is ash a big component of our hardwoods, say natural hardwoods, and all of our urban forest?
Sure. So up until last year, we didn't know. I mean, you know, and that goes to the quantification. It's very difficult to manage what you don't know. So in measuring, how many trees do we have in our urban forest in Tulsa? Well, it's just under 5.3 million. We know that 4% are ash. So fortunately, 96% of our trees are not ash. But if you do the math on that, that's over 200,000 trees that over the next, you know, 3 to 5 years are going to be in jeopardy. And this
you say in jeopardy at this point because we have not seen it here in
sure.
Tulsa.
Tulsa.
Northeastern Oklahoma.
Far northeastern Oklahoma. You know, what the USDA, U.S. Forestry Service, that when it gets within 25 miles, but that could be happening now. I mean, somebody could be transporting wood in right now. And so that is why we're working diligently to put this EAB response plan. How do we get that information out? I mean, you have an ash tree in your backyard, and you know what it looks like.
Yeah.
But how would the average constituent go, okay, I have an ash tree. What can I do? Can I treat it? There are treatments. What's the cost benefit of treating versus removing versus replacing? And this goes back to the municipal side. From data that was collected, city parks have about between 1,100 and 1,200 ash trees. We know what the park's budget has been as of late. You know, what will the plan be to either treat those, to remove those, if they're removed, to replace those? There will be an economic impact on both our city and county properties.
My guest today is Steve Grantham, the executive director of Up With Trees. Up With Trees revealed their new Tulsa Urban Forest Master Plan today. This has been under development, what?
A little over a year and a half, yeah.
18 months, yeah. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. When you talked about the quantification, you said, hey, we know how many trees. We have 5.3 million trees approximately within the city of Tulsa. What are some of the other ways you've quantified urban forests as far as seeing benefits?
Sure.
Knowing what the composition of the forest is.
So, you know, to the benefits aspect, we were able to quantify the environmental benefits that our urban forest provides. It's a little over $31 million a year in environmental benefits. That includes stormwater mitigation. Hundreds of millions of gallons of water that doesn't make it down into our stormwater, into our rivers, into our lakes that are naturally cleaned by the absorption through roots, through evapotranspiration, through leaves, you know, which we probably wouldn't want higher humidity, but it provides the cooling effect. I mean, how much worse would it be without that cooling effect with our heat island effect and things like that? So a little over $30 million in that aspect. In home valuations, over $100 million in increased property values within the city limits of Tulsa. And if you would think about that with, from your and my net worth, our homes are worth more, and over a long period of time, our net worth increases, but also from an ad valorem tax standpoint, the taxes collected on those increased values over time goes to schools, libraries, health departments, those things that build a better, stronger, more resilient community.
You know, one of your benchmarks was connected, yep, having a forest that's connected, and certainly like in Midtown Tulsa, which probably has the strongest property values, you do have this connected forest. Is there a correlation there?
There's definitely a correlation. I mean, if you look at Midtown Tulsa with their canopy coverage, with the care that goes into those trees, we know that trees provide real environmental, economic, and social benefits. So wherever we have canopy coverage, we'll get the environmental benefits, but we won't necessarily get those economic and social benefits if we don't maintain that forest. So that goes to the resiliency, that goes to the safety, but that certainly goes to the connectivity as well.
And when you're trying to quantify what the urban forest, how it's important, was there any interesting statistic that sort of stuck out to you that was like, oh, I hadn't even thought of that particular
sure
benefit?
So to the heat island effect, you know, we looked at all roadways in Tulsa, and nearly 70% of our roadways have 10% canopy coverage or less. And this was something that stood out to the decision makers, the elected officials, because we also did a survey to get public input. And it was, where would you like to see trees? The number one place was along major arterial streets to create that kind of boulevard effect and whatnot. But it also reduces crashes. People actually travel slower and road rage, and there are studies that point out all of these things. But it was really interesting to see that correlation on from two different things. The people saying, this is where we want trees. We have very few trees along those major arterials. And so this came up in future bond packages.
There's How about informing organizations such as yourself, Up With Trees, which is about planting?
Absolutely.
I mean, the main place we see you is, yep, along major roadways.
Along highways and things like that. Absolutely. If you go to the nitrogen dioxide along there and goes back to the health benefits of if there are neighborhoods there, commercial businesses and become more inviting, goes to that economic development. So again, it is melding all of these benefits together. That's why the urban forest is important.
Now, there's one other aspect of the plan that we haven't really talked a whole lot about, and that's a training education part of it. And one of your big concerns, I think, is the training aspect of making sure we have enough trained, licensed horticulturists to take care of the urban forest.
You know,
is that a real concern?
It is, and it's a concern nationwide. Fewer schools are putting out graduates in horticulture and forestry and arboriculture, and this is a nationwide trend. If you look at what's happening in Tulsa with major planting initiatives done by us at Up With Trees, the gathering place going in, we are a very green city. How are we going to maintain what we currently have and what we will have in the future? And who's going to do that? As you know, I have a few more years in me, I hope, but as I age out, who will kind of backfill that? And so that is definitely something that was taken into account in this. How are we going to educate people that we currently need, but also the next generation as well?
Now, I know TCC has dropped their horticultural program. Is that correct?
Correct.
What effect will something like that have?
So, Up With Trees started the conversation with the Tulsa Botanic Garden, with many different groups throughout the community and have formed the Tulsa Horticultural Alliance to help offer courses taught by, accredited, very well-known people within the community to help people get, whether it's their applicator's license for pesticides, whether it's arboriculture training where they can become a certified arborist.
I would say, or even just training a landscape person or a lawn mowing service.
Absolutely.
How to get the training and then be licensed at some point.
Absolutely. And so we are working on that process. It will roll out in the spring of next year. But this is a direct response to our concern with TCC horticulture program going away.
So after going through this year and a half long process, what's the big takeaway for Up With Trees itself?
One, I knew how great our community was, but just how interconnected we all are, how on the same page we have all become, whether that's corporate, philanthropic, experts in the field. You know, the things that we're definitely going to be addressing, we have a lot of ash trees of our own. And so working with our board, and how do we answer how are we going to remove these? How are we going to replace these? Getting it out to our donors that, all right, if you like the tree-lined medians on Riverside and Memorial, a lot of those trees are going to go away.
Do you think it will be more preemptive or reactive once the borer is in the city?
So what we are looking at right now with that response plan is kind of a triage aspect to anything that it's kind of at the end of its life cycle. We'll go ahead. Try to imagine removing 200,000 trees in 1 year. It would be Johnson Park after the ice storm times. I don't know how many, but a lot. The city doesn't have the capacity to chip all of that up and get rid of all of that even. And this is a conversation had with our elected officials. So it is triaging to make sure that we can take what needs to be taken out. If there are some emotionally significant or culturally significant trees, to make sure that those start getting treated prior to the pest coming, and then coming up with a replacement plan over, a 3 to 5 year period as well. That will help break it up over budget cycles. But it's going to be a huge impact on our community. So that would be one of them. But also in looking, one of the number one recommendations out of this plan, and it's come out of multiple groups before, is to redo the entryway into Tulsa from the airport into downtown Tulsa. And we're currently, hopefully, landing the funding to do a significant portion of Highway 11 and some of 244. It was one of the number one recommendations from a kind of a blue ribbon committee that the mayor's office had put in a few years ago, and then also out of this master plan as well. So hopefully we'll hit the ground running with that, but just growing forward, well, that's the tagline for our master plan as
growing
well.
Growing forward.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you can see the master plan at the Up With Trees site, upwithtrees.org.
It is up there, and all of the underlying ancillary documentations, the assessments that helped to inform this as well.
Steve, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Steve Grantham is the executive director of Up With Trees. Up With Trees unveiled their Tulsa Urban Forest Master Plan earlier today. You can see the plan at their website, upwithtrees.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own, do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.